America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is The Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. Certainly a great day for Wall Street. I mean, it's just kind of amazing to see the way things go up, they go down, they go all around. Dow Jones Industrial Averages up 506 points today. And what that means is that with a great day yesterday and with this even greater day today, it's the biggest one-day gain since July, that means that that huge wipeout where the Dow had lost about 900 points last Monday, it's now erased that loss entirely. What is going on? Do people not notice that there are 1,900 people dying every day of COVID? And there are literally millions of Americans who refuse to get vaccinated. And this has become a huge political issue. Don't people notice that we have a crisis on the border? And there was a piece in the Wall Street Journal. And again, the Wall Street Journal has been pro-immigration for a long time. But they have a headlined article today that says Latin American migration turns into a mass exodus. Far broader mix of nationalities cross the border driven by pandemic. And what they point out is that, hey, it's not all Mexicans or people from El Salvador and Guatemala and Honduras, the Northern Triangle. Suddenly, reports the journal, it's Ecuadorians, Brazilians, Nicaraguans, Venezuelans, Haitians, and Cubans who are turning up by the hundreds of thousands, a trend that accelerated sharply in the past 6 months. Okay, what is going on, and why is the administration unable to get hold of the situation at all? Pleasure to speak about that with Ruben Navarrete. He is a nationally syndicated columnist. He is an important and fresh voice in the national political debate. His column comes out twice weekly. It's syndicated worldwide by the Washington Post Writers Group. Ruben, you've been down to the border. You've lived with this issue forward, backward, up and down. Why do you think it is that the Biden administration does seem to be so paralyzed in terms of dealing with the situation, especially with the literally tens of thousands of Haitians now who are hoping to storm across the border?
Michael, great to be back with you again. I think one of the reasons that Joe Biden has become paralyzed and wrapped up in his own rhetoric is it's the same reason that Barack Obama failed on immigration. They're trying to do two things at once. Joe Biden wants to be both tough and compassionate. His whole appeal to moderates is based on this idea that we'll hold the line, we'll enforce our immigration laws. He's not for, quote, amnesty, as he would call it. He wants people to be able to trust him with the security of the border. On the other hand, he has progressives nipping at his heels and saying, you ought not, for starters, send Border Patrol agents on horseback to basically use the reins of the horses to essentially whip or strike out at women holding babies. Which is not an unreasonable request. So he's trying to do both, and he's trying to please both groups. He's tied himself into knots, and he's just failing this issue. 6 ways from Sunday, as you can plainly see, as anybody can see from watching the news, he's in way over his head thanks to all these Haitians coming through the southern border into Del Rio, Texas.
So, again, one of the things that people haven't talked about is they're flying many of them back to Haiti. Now, that's an expensive process, among other things. Don't you think, Ruben, that part of the problem that he's facing is that some of the rhetoric he used about immigration during the campaign, which, after all, was less than a year ago, may not have been heard by Americans, but that was heard by potential migrants to the United States, who assumed that, hey, Joe Biden's in, we got a free ticket.
Yeah. I've had to change my view on this, Michael. I've been on your show probably 6 months ago, and I said that I did not believe that, for instance, for the Central Americans, when your house is on fire and a gang comes to your house and threatens to sexually assault your daughter and recruit your son into the gang, I said, well, it really doesn't matter what the president of the United States says. You're leaving regardless. And I also said that Donald Trump said don't come, and people came anyway. Having said that, in the last 6 months or so, we now have seen more reporters go down to the border into the caravans, interview people, and they are saying basically, I'm coming because I heard a rumor that Joe Biden will let me stay. It's really hard to dispute that. I think it's all true. A lot of these things are true at the same time. But yeah, I think that has been a factor. But again, the situation in Haiti, as you know, 10 years ago, 11 years ago, the devastating earthquake, a 7.0, another earthquake last month, floods, mudslides, everything's gone.
Assassination of the president.
They're all, yes, the assassination of the president. They're all leaving. And when they ask people, what do you have to go back to Haiti? The answer is nothing. I have nothing to go back to. So they deserve, in my mind, the same shot that any other would-be refugee deserves, and which is the chance to go in and plead your case. As I said before on your show, only one in four of these asylum pleas are ever successful. But somehow the Biden administration thinks it's a good idea to take away that last chance, last 25%. They had slim to none, and now they took away slim. And I just don't think that's the American way. I don't think that's good for the country. I think it's shameful that in a country of 330 million people, we're freaking out over 20,000 Haitians while simultaneously welcoming 95,000 Afghans. I mean, can anybody explain the rhyme or reason to Joe Biden's refugee policy?
Well, I suspect that somebody would suggest that the Afghans that we're welcoming were people who actually had aligned themselves with the United States before they made the trip. And they were basically directly invited by the United States. The Haitians are people, and again, many of these Haitians are going through Mexico and other countries in Central America on their way to the United States, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely. Going through Mexico, funny thing, right? After 11 years ago, when they emptied out after the earthquake, they went to Chile and Colombia, largely in South America. And they learned Spanish. Now they speak French and Spanish. They speak more languages than most Americans. And now they're coming in through the southern border from places like Colombia and Chile. When I hear about the idea of being invited, I'm always conflicted here because on the one hand, refugees are never invited. Refugees are never welcomed. They're never invited. They always show up at the most inopportune and inconvenient times because they're refugees. They're not, foreign visiting students from Oxford. So that's the truth. But on the other hand, I would say that every refugee has been invited, and they're invited by the nice, beautiful copper lady in New York Harbor who says, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, the wretched refuse. This is the Statue of Liberty's promise, and at the very least, I mean, if they don't have us to come to and try their hand at the one in four golden tickets that they might receive in this rigged game, then where else do they have to go?
Okay, so let's go back to that one in four golden tickets. Yeah. The idea that we are now, the policy is they're going to turn down about three quarters of the people who apply for asylum. When the people are turned down, they're often already in the country, aren't they?
Well, yes. So that's a good point. Again, lots happening, right? On the one hand, the administration sent home back to Haiti, deported 1,100 people. On the other hand, we found out yesterday that the administration has discreetly, quietly let in about 1,000 people with a notice to appear before a judge within 60 days. Now, oftentimes we know from dealing with the Central Americans, the refugee might go to Montana and then we'll say you have to meet before this judge in Michigan. And it's not altogether convenient, and maybe they never appear before the judge. Some do, some don't. But ultimately, that's where we're at. We're in this confused state where the poor Haitians are confused, right? Because 1,000 got deported, 1,000 got to go to the U.S., and nobody knows, the administration hasn't said, how they're deciding these things. I mean, there's any...
Ruben, you were saying the Haitians are confused. I think Americans are confused. Voters are confused. The Biden administration is confused. Can you help sort through the confusion in another segment coming right up about the crisis at the border? We'll be right back.
The Michael Medved Show. Michael Medved.
All on the Michael Medved Show. Grateful to have a few minutes more with Ruben Navarrete, columnist and public affairs thinker extraordinaire. 1-800-955-1776 is our phone number. Okay, Ruben, the difficulty in terms of hearing anyone in prominent in American life with a coherent policy on immigration, I mean, it seems almost as if the last time that happened was the last time that they tried a comprehensive immigration bill under the Obama administration with some prominent Republicans. I think they had 12 in the Senate who were supporting it. We're nowhere near any, I have heard nothing from anyone in the administration or in the Republican side or on the Democratic side that is even vaguely plausible. Have you?
I have not, and I'm not sure it's, Michael, because we're out of ideas. I think it's because we're out of courage and guts. And for Republicans and Democrats both, this issue takes a lot of courage, because the first thing you have to do is referee the civil war in your own party. And nobody likes to do that. When my kids fight, I don't want to referee the fight. And likewise, for the Republican Party, they've got to balance the Chamber of Commerce that wants more immigration, the nativist wing of the GOP that wants less. On the Democrat side, they need to deal with labor that wants less immigration, and the Latinos who want more. And so if you get into this mess, you're going to get bruised. And I think that politicians in general in Washington and Congress and in the Senate have this natural aversion to getting bruised. So this is an issue they stay away from. The only issue, Michael,
Isn't it true that you were talking about Latinos want more immigration? I was just reading polling, which was stunning, showing overwhelmingly Latinos oppose illegal immigration.
So we're very clear on supporting legal immigration. You know, half the Border Patrol, in fact, is Latino. We're a law enforcement community, and we do oppose illegal immigration. But we also are pretty susceptible to the arguments that, you know, Americans are not going to do these jobs because many of us have done these jobs. We've seen our parents do these jobs. We don't like deportation as a remedy because friends and family members have been deported. We are much closer to the immigration debate than a lot of people, and so we don't really buy the soundbite lies that I hear on other talk radio stations from really uninformed people who don't know what they're talking about. So that's where Latinos kind of get off the bus. It's funny, Republicans start with Latinos on their side, but they have a tendency to blow them away, you know, to alienate them when they employ, say, racist rhetoric that sometimes happens in states like California. So we are conservative voters, but we're sensitive to, we have a high BS meter on immigration, let's put it that way.
Okay, so with that BS meter fully deployed and operative, what do we do?
Yeah, well, in the case of the Haitians, as I said, you know, I feel terrible, and I think we all Americans should feel terrible. Investment bankers who went to Yale and Harvard don't need our defense. These Haitian immigrants need our defense. And this is why we have refugee laws in the first place and asylum laws in the first place. The parallel I can draw, Michael, I heard the story this morning. I couldn't believe it, that the Mexicans don't want the Haitians either. So when the Haitians went back into Mexico rather than being deported to Haiti, the Mexicans drove them to Guatemala. This has now become quite comical.
Just what Guatemala needs.
Yes, you start off in Haiti. Let me get this straight. You start off in Haiti, then you went to Colombia, then you went to Mexico, to the U.S., back to Mexico, now you're in Guatemala. I mean, the last time we saw anything like this was in the 1930s when the world turned its backs on Jews and said, we don't want the Jews. Nobody wants the Jews. Now nobody wants the Haitians. And it's just shocking. I mean, this is not how human beings are supposed to treat other human beings. Women carrying babies should not be beat by big men on horseback.
Do you know who had the idea of deploying the cavalry?
That's DHS policy, the Department of Homeland Security, and the news may have broke. You may have seen this. The news broke today, Michael. They are discontinuing temporarily that policy. They went from Monday saying, we have no problem, we've done nothing wrong, to now on Thursday, we're no longer going to be using horses at the border because it blew up in their face.
Okay, so right now we have a huge problem of potential government shutdown, a potential default, a potential collapse of the U.S. economy. And this is for real. It's not a phony, made-up catastrophe. It really could cost all of us life savings and other disasters. We can't seem to get that right. Is there some way we could fold some constructive approach to immigration other than the chaos that we're going through right now?
The Democrats tried this underhanded move by Chuck Schumer, who's known for underhanded moves, where he tried to put this into reconciliation, this idea of legal status for the undocumented. And the parliamentarian called this out and said, that's an overreach. You can't do that. We all know you can't do that. I don't think the Democrats ever took this seriously or ever meant for it not to get caught and taken out of the bill. I don't think they really care about fixing this problem, nor do the Republicans, for the reasons I mentioned earlier. So I don't think it can be done that way. It has to be done the old way. And that's when George W. Bush in 2007 put together with John Kyle and leaders on the Democratic side this wonderful compromise bill where nobody got everything. And ultimately, it was Harry Reid on the Democrats that torpedoed that bill.
That's and Barack story. Obama. Barack Obama when he was in the
and
Senate.
And Barack Obama. He voted against it. Exactly right. And so this is one of the things that galls me. People in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. And Democrats have done a good job of demonizing Republicans as being anti-immigrant. And now look what's happening with a Democrat in the White House.
What's happening is not popular. It is not keeping promises because there was never any Biden promise for an open border. And
right.
Isn't it unseemly that constantly we have the Secretary of Department of Homeland Security and Immigration saying the border is closed, the border is closed, when people can see on their TV screen virtually every night that it's not?
Yeah, I don't think the debate is over open or closed. It's over secure or unsecure. We have an insecure border. We're never going to have a sealed border, and it's certainly not an open border. Because in an open border, Michael, those guys who are on horseback, they're back at headquarters drinking coffee, and they're waving to the patients as they come on through. They're not on horseback trying to corral them, arrest them, and send them back. The minute we start deporting people back to Haiti, it shoots a big hole in this idea that we have an open border down there. Nobody's in favor of an open border, and believe me, Joe Biden is not an open border president. He can't make up his mind at the moment what he is.
Well, again, that's the difficulty, is we have no idea where they're going, what is happening, except there is just a sense. The last time they shut down the government, you remember what the issue was?
Was it Obamacare?
No, last time they shut down the government was building Trump's wall.
Okay. I was thinking of the time where Ted Cruz forced Republicans to stand up
to
their promises.
That's right. That was the time before. We had a government shutdown that lasted longer and cost the public more over Trump's wall, which is not entirely built, by the way, as President Trump recently indicated. But Ruben Navarrete, let's work on this. I mean, come on, we got to be able to do better than what Biden's doing right now, which is sad. We will be right back on the MedVet Show.
Your outlet for outrage.
Outrageous.
The Michael MedVet Show. 1-800-955-1776. The Michael MedVet Show. That's 1-800-955-1776.
On the Michael Medved Show, American history has its frustrating moments. This is clearly one of them. I don't think anyone will look back on the fall of 2021 as a high point in the grand progress of this greatest nation. But that's why it's so important to be reminded of some of the great moments in this great nation, because they can help to inspire us to find a way out from this mess that we're in. That's why I think that the most important service that we offer, and certainly I've always considered it that way, is the work on U.S. history, which includes the books God's Hand on America, and before that, The American Miracle, and The 10 Big Lies About America, and then also our history programs, which are basically available to MedHead members, people who join as MedHead members at the MedHead Plus membership. It's available free. And this is literally 200 hours worth of inspiration and information. And you get all of that by paying less than 20 cents a day. It's a remarkable opportunity. It's $79.95 for an entire year. And you can use that entire year to download, to stream any of the MedVed history programs on our roster, the American Revolution, the origins of the Middle Eastern conflict, the worst presidents in history, the history of third parties, and much, much more. So check it out. Go to michaelmedved.com. Look on the banner for MedHead Plus membership. It's $79.95 for an entire year for an annual membership with access to all of that free material. There's breaking news. Oh, no. Multiple people were shot at a Tennessee supermarket. According to local authorities, the shooting occurred inside of a Kroger store in the town of Collierville in suburban Memphis. Jennifer Casey, public information officer for the town of Collierville, confirmed to the New York Post that there were multiple victims and that the injured were being hospitalized. According to Fox 13, 9 people were shot, the shooter dead from a self-inflicted wound. Now 13 shot. What can you say? It is so horrible. Though the idea that this happens only in America is simply not true. It happens more often in America. But we just had a terrible shooting in Russia at a law school where 6 people were shot. And in Russia, they give you sanity tests before you can even get access to a gun. This came in from Paul in Arlington, Texas. And he says, "Dear Michael, I've listened to you for many years and I've been a MedHead for probably the last 10 years at least. You're my favorite talk show host as I believe you provide the most balanced and thoughtful approach to the subjects you discuss." Well, thank you. I try. "Since I listen to the podcasts, I can't call in, which drives me crazy sometimes, leading me to my disagreement with you about COVID vaccines. Vaccines protect the vaccinated, period," he says. "It's a false narrative to say I'm getting a vaccine to protect others. It's a brain-dead narrative, since it is clear that vaccinated people can still get COVID. Additionally, if you had COVID, you are much more protected than having the vaccine, as the Israeli study showed." That's simply not true, Paul. They advise people who have already had COVID to get vaccines because the protection is much more durable and extensive. He also says, "Additionally, if you are much more protected than having the vaccine, as the Israeli studies show, so taking the position that a restaurant owner should demand to see a vaccine card before serving you, even if you had COVID, is just flat out dumb. I'm not calling you dumb, Michael," he says. "You're the greatest. Thank you. He says, "Why can't we just be honest? The only unselfish benefit to others for being vaccinated is that I could get COVID and contribute to overflowing the hospitals if I don't. My decision to get vaccinated was that, given my age and medical history, I am much more likely to die from COVID than to die or suffer a terrible side effects from the vaccine. I did this despite my wife asking me not to, so I am doing this for me and even for her and to help the hospital situation. Stop pushing the narrative that it is to protect others. It's not my responsibility to do that anyway. And if the vaccines work, you should not give a rat's rear end," he says, "whether other people are vaccinated. Thanks, Michael. Love you always. And Paul. Well, Paul, thanks very much for the kind words. Here's the essence of our disagreement. I would never suggest to people that you should get yourself vaccinated for the sake of others. I would suggest to people, and I do, that you get vaccinated for the sake of the country. Because this country is in a mess right now. We're losing 1,900 people a day. So how do you correct that? How can you possibly improve that situation unless you get some of those 71 million people who haven't yet been vaccinated, get them vaccinated? Because this is the whole idea. You are helping other people because you're helping the country. And economically, for national security, and for personal health. Obviously, if you're talking about a place to go for vacation, you don't want to go on vacation to a place that is a COVID-19 hotspot. It's not a good idea, which means you want to tamp down the virus in the various hotspots, and no one else has ever come up with a better idea, no, not ivermectin, not any treatment for the virus, than vaccines. And here's a USA Today fact check. COVID-19 vaccine protects both the person vaccinated and those around them. Getting vaccinated prevents hospitals from being overwhelmed. And then part of what they say at USA Today is that getting vaccinated also benefits others by greatly reducing the likelihood that a vaccinated person who does get a breakthrough infection will become critically ill and need to be hospitalized. At the end, that idea that COVID-19 vaccine protects both the person vaccinated and those around him, the idea that they give the rating false to the notion that getting a vaccine has no impact on the other individuals. They say, based on our research, we rate false the claim that getting vaccinated against COVID-19 only benefits the vaccinated person. Epidemiologists agree that getting vaccinated benefits individuals by reducing their risk of contracting COVID-19 and spreading it to other people. This protects those who can't be vaccinated and those for whom the vaccine is less effective, those with other medical conditions and children under 12. Vaccinations also prevent individuals from getting critically ill and hospitals from being overwhelmed. Look at what's going on in Idaho and Alaska. And by the way, your wife may not have wanted you to get vaccinated, but you helped her by getting yourself vaccinated, by helping reduce the chances of spread through your community and your neighborhood. Thanks, Paul, for the note. We will be right back.
1-800-955-1776. The Michael Medved Show. That's 1-800-955.
On the Michael Medved Show, one of the looming difficulties that, honest to God, I don't think people are taking seriously enough in Washington, D.C., going beyond the border, beyond the problems with the pandemic and the debates about vaccines, beyond anything else, is the potential collapse of the U.S. economy. Yeah, the market had a great day today. Good. But the difficulty with the Democrats being so divided that they can't vote an increase in the debt ceiling, even though if every Democrat voted to increase the debt ceiling, no strings attached, just increase the debt ceiling. Go ahead, do it. They could do it. Why won't they do it? They don't want to own it. And basically, they favor policies that would make the debt situation for the United States even worse than it is. And it's terrible right now. And that kind of difficulty is only is only exacerbated and profoundly when you have a situation like you do at the border, where even Good Morning America, nobody would accuse Good Morning America of being a conservative report or operation. But listen to the way they described the situation at the Del Rio Bridge. This is clip five. Listen.
New images of that migrant camp under the Del Rio Bridge. A significant decrease, but the scene still heartbreaking.
There is a humanitarian need here, and we need to make sure that we're treating everybody fairly.
Overnight, new numbers from the Department of Homeland Security saying since Sunday, more than 1,400 migrants have been flown back to Haiti on a dozen flights. 3,200 taken into custody but still in the U.S., preparing to be deported or placed into removal proceedings while they seek asylum. Less than 5,000 migrants, mostly Haitian, remain in this encampment, down from roughly 14,000 over the weekend.
Yes, there are fewer people here, but it is still tough to see these images. Children sleeping on cardboard, families waiting for the U.S. to tell them what's next.
Okay, again, I know it's wrong on many counts to make the comparison, because a very different thing. In one situation, you're dealing mostly with U.S. citizens. In another, you're dealing with many people who've never even set foot in the United States before. But I'm talking about the homeless encampments. I mean, they have 14,000 Haitians camped at the Del Rio River, and the government is going into paroxysms to try to do something about the situation for them. There are literally hundreds of thousands now, and it's not millions. It's often exaggerated, but it is hundreds of thousands of people who are living in homeless encampments in every city in the country. And this, I believe that part of the problem there is related to the problem here, which is that the government has sent a very, very dangerous message, which is it's okay. Set up your little shanty, set up your cardboard shelter, pitch your tents. This is fine, and we'll take care of you. And yes, of course, you have more reason to take care of people who have been born in the United States, may have paid taxes here at some point, may even have served in our military. But serving in the military, you are entitled to many benefits. And no one should be entitled to the benefit to sleep on public property and to assault the way people live in Seattle and Portland and Los Angeles and San Francisco and New York City and Chicago and elsewhere. Maxine Waters is particularly upset with some of the images she saw. She stood with other Democrats outside the Capitol building describing the what she understood to be the meaning of Border Patrol agents apprehending illegal immigrants or potential illegal immigrants on horseback. This is clip 4A.
What the hell are we doing here? What we witness takes us back hundreds of years. What we witnessed was worse than what we witnessed in slavery. Cowboys with their reins again whipping black people, Haitians, into the water where they're scrambling and falling down when all they're trying to do is escape from violence in their country.
Okay, worse than slavery? No one is trying to capture these people and force them into labor. What they're trying to do is to deal with what is a heartbreaking situation. Am I glad that they have said no more horseback imagery like that? Yes, it's appropriate that they did that. Is it appropriate that Maxine Waters compares this to slavery? It trivializes the real horrors of slavery, and it's wrong to say it. She went on and again invoked slavery. This is 4B.
And we're saying to the president and everybody else, you got to stop this madness. And I want to know, in the first place, who's paying these cowboys to do this work? They've got to be gotten rid of. They've gotten to be stopped. It cannot go on. And so I thank all of you for being here today. Write the story. Tell the story about what is going on. And let people know that they're trying to take us back to slavery days and worse than that.
Okay. She's worse than slavery days? What does that mean? Cannibalism days? I mean, what's worse than slavery days? Okay. Maxine Waters. The difficulty here, first of all, it's amazing. She's talking about a Democratic president. This is not her talking about Donald Trump, who we know she tried to impeach, basically, from the very first time, weeks he came to office. The difficulty is, okay, Maxine, you don't want to take us back to slavery days, et cetera, et cetera. What do you do about this? When even Democrats can't agree, Republicans can't agree, nobody can agree on a policy. On MSNBC, there was a guest, Marielana Hincapi, executive director of the National Immigration Law Center, who said that this current crisis shows racism. A clip one.
From the beginning of our country, this country has an immigration system that is based on race and class, and it has been racialized. Haitians have been treated very differently than Cubans and other migrants. And I would say even today, at a time that we are welcoming refugees from Afghanistan, as we should also be welcoming Haitians who cannot be deported to a country that is in turmoil right now. The United States has a responsibility of ensuring that individuals can exercise their legal right to seek asylum and to seek safety in our country. It's not surprising, right, that given the white supremacist roots of this nation, that our immigration system is also reflective of that anti-blackness that exists.
Okay, the most dramatic example of racism in our immigration system was not against blacks, it was against Asians. And we had the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1881. We made it very, very difficult for people to migrate from Asia anywhere to the United States or to go on and become naturalized citizens, which was actually blocked for many years, even after the 14th Amendment, which guaranteed citizenship to black people. Does this represent the same idea? If you take the position that the United States must accept people from everywhere in the world where things are a mess, when they are in crisis, when they are suffering, then what happens to the United States? Where is there a limit? What's fascinating to me is that you will hear from liberals the idea that the United States is overpopulated, we have too many people here, and one of the great supports for abortion is that it will help keep population under control. People support abortion on that basis. And yet, is there no limit or no regulation or no order to be brought to an immigration system which is increasingly chaotic and contradictory and hypocritical? And once they take care of the financial mess we're in, where we face devastating, devastating impact if we don't, in the next 2 weeks, do something about the spending crisis and raising the debt limit, well, then we face real, real problems for this greatest nation on God's green earth.